Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. This is Jackie Cation. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, FamilyPetAncestry.com. Yes, I bought it. Anyway, you know the credits maybe, but let's say them again. Let's shout them out. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio. Mike Rickberg composed the intro song to The Dork Forest, sang it with his girlfriend Sarah Cohen. Mike will sing his lyrics to the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the show. And Vilmos fixes my website, JackieCation.com. JackieCation.com is where, by the way, you can get all the merch of your dreams and the Amazon banner, which is a portal to Amazon where you can order from Amazon. Doesn't cost you any more money. It's just a way to get to Amazon to place your order. And then I get a kickback. It's a good way to donate to the podcast if you can't use the donation button right now, because we all order from Amazon. If you can use the donation button, that is also on the Dork Forest page and the Jackie Cation page. I suggest $10 a month for $100 a year to be a super fan. And if you can do it, that'd be great. And if you can't, I totally get it. Other than that, there's merch. You can get t-shirts, Ranger t-shirt, Dork Forest t-shirt designed by Brett Chambers, the Ranger t-shirt designed by my nephew. All of my CDs are available there. They're also available on iTunes and Amazon, and you can just listen to them on Pandora or Spotify. My special, the DVD special, This Will Make an Excellent Horcrux, is available for $5 download if you don't need a hard copy at All Things Records. That's probably allthingscomedy.com. Go to allthingscomedy.com or go to my website and click through the trailer where you can see a clip. Anyway, All Things Comedy is the podcast hosting organism that the Dork Forest is part of with Al Madrigal and Bill Burr. And there's a lot of great podcasts over there, and they're trying to help comics publish and publicize all of their podcasting, stand-up, and all that stuff. So if you get a chance, browse the other podcasts that are over there. This month's advertisement is for my friend Jenny Bergman, has a toy store on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Very, very specific geographic advertising for people who live in New York City and find themselves on the Upper West Side on 84th and Amsterdam, and they want to go to a place called West Side Kids. West Side Kids, Jenny Bergman. And West Side Kids has a lot of educational toys, as Tina Fey made fun of in Bossy Pants, but it also has just regular toys. And they have really good instruments and really good costumes, and they have a lot of just great. It's a great toy store. So if you're up there, go to it and say hi to Jenny Bergman for me. Stand-up comedy. Should probably talk about this. I am in Los Angeles for a week or so doing a headline set over at the Hollywood Improv with a bunch of comics that I got to pick to open for me. And that's neat. Hollywood Improv on March 28th. And then the beginning of April, I think my next road gig is in Salt Lake City, Wise Guys. I don't think it's Trolley Square. I think it's the other one, which I haven't played in years. Let's see what that's like. Let's get into the show, though. Dork time. Let's do it. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I am sitting in my living room because there was a convention and a man emailed me. You could email me, men and women of the world. And Mike Olson did. Welcome to the program, Mike Olson.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Excellent. And then Andy Ashcraft is here because we're going to be discussing gaming.
And I went to that convention.
And you also went to that convention. And why don't I do this? Mike Olson with an O.
Yeah, that's right.
And at Devlin, the number one, D-E-V-L-I-N, one.
Right.
And spiritoftheblank.blogspot.com.
Correct.
Is where all sort of the promo stuff is. And you're a game designer.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a freelance game designer. I've done a lot of work with the Fate system.
With the Fate system, which...
Yeah. Which powers Atomic Robo.
And, which powers Atomic Robo. Yeah. And these are all words that I have heard before.
Yeah.
But not
in those, that combination.
Nope. Not in that sentence. So Atomic Robo is a role-playing game
right.
based on a comic book.
Right.
A comic book that Andy Ashcraft insists that I have read.
Right. We have one volume of it.
And I've probably read it.
Yep.
But I cannot, for the love of me, life, find out what I've done with it. Completely silly. But before we go there... Now, what was the name of the con that you guys went to?
Oh, OrcCon. It's one of the three strategic con conventions that happen in L.A. During the year.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why they insist on calling all of them Strategicon and then individual names for each of them, Orcon, GameX, and Gateway, because it's just confusing to talk about.
Well, they used to all be individually run and owned.
Right, right.
And so that's why.
I went to them in junior high.
Right.
I remember
right. You were here before I was.
So. Wow. Did you grow up in Los Angeles?
I grew up in the Valley, like in Woodland Hills, Calabasas.
Okay.
Area. So,
yeah, that's...
I started playing D&D when I was 8.
Wow.
So
all right.
I remember going to conventions when junior high, 11, 12.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
Think about California, is that, especially Los Angeles, people will be like, yeah, there's a thing. There's a let's take you and point you in the direction of the right. people that you're clearly attracted to.
Right.
And so you have been working on games and this type of thing for a million years.
Well, I played games and ran games a lot and have been a fan, you know, sort of on and off. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, I actually got to start making games for money, which was very cool.
That is the dork.
That's the dream.
Yeah, that's
the dork dream. That is the dork forest dream where you get to do the thing you love.
How did that happen? How did that just sort of just fall into your lap or what happened?
Yeah, it did. I have this blog, Spirit of the Blank, that we mentioned that I was really taken with this, with Fate, specifically this game called Spirit of the Century, which was the game that kind of brought Fate to the main, well, it's not going to say mainstream, but to the attention of a lot of people in gaming.
Okay.
And I really fell in love with it, and I wanted to use it for everything. It was written as a 20s pulp game, but I wanted to hack it and make it do different things. And so I had a lot of ideas for that, so I thought I would start this blog and pretend that anyone would care about that. And then after about a year of that, Chris Birch, who had written a game called Starblazer Adventures, which also used Spirit of the Century as a core, he emailed me about working on a fantasy version of Starblazer Adventures, because that's mostly what I was blogging about. And I was like, yeah, great, absolutely. So that game was called Legends of Anglaire. And
it was also a tabletop?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And it was my first experience working on a game, and I was super excited, and I never asked about a contract or what I might be paid for it or
sure.
anything. And, you know, what with one thing and another, I had that book in my hands before I knew what my word rate was going to be for it.
Okay.
But that's fine. It was a start. It was a credit I could claim
yeah.
later. Mm-hmm. And then I got other work off of that and the blog, and it just snowballed.
Oh, that's
well,
great.
That's that's a blog dream.
Yeah,
dream
exactly.
Story. It's I wrote toward people that I didn't know were even listening, and then
right.
somebody cared. So that's perfect. So you've always gamed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Because I only played Monopoly in life
right.
as a child. And then you guys were playing D&D and all other role-playing games, the major one, especially small press indie games of today and old school games of the 80s.
Yeah.
What are the old school games of the 80s
well,
that you
like,
played?
Like Advanced Dungeons and Dragons or, you know, like
Champions.
Old games from the 80s. Champions, yeah, which I didn't play in the 80s, but I got into later, but... Top Secret, Gamma World, like these old games that came out right in the Tunnels and Trolls, right in the wake of D&D.
Okay.
They were kind of a sort of a response to D&D in some ways.
Oh,
Gamma
they were
World
like...
and Top Secret less so, but Tunnels and Trolls for sure. But,
okay.
You know, D&D kind of broke it open, and then a lot of other people started making games, and I like those old games.
So people really like D&D, and so
yep.
what happened was is they were like, oh, well, let's take that
The idea
and set
game.
It in other yeah,
yeah
the idea of
yeah.
a role playing game and put it in another
yeah. or like,
world
like Traveller. Mm-hmm. Let's do that in the far future where you have a ship and you're going around trying to make money, or let's do it in the '20s where you're all gangbusters, or let's do it in the Old West on
okay.
you know, Boot Hill, or you know
right.
like let's other genres to role play in other than fantasy.
Okay,
so
and you played most of them, or many of them.
I played a lot of those. Yeah,
and
how many
yeah.
of them hold up now?
Like it's hard
modern...
to say. I'm so charmed by them.
Like, okay, so you cut them
enough.
A fair amount of slack.
Yeah, yeah. I like to take new games. Now, I mean, in those days, games were sort of a physics simulator in some ways. I don't want to tar them with that brush necessarily, but
yeah.
by that I mean, like, here are the rules of a world. Here's how things make sense. Should make, like, if you were there and you're going to fall this far, you take some damage from that. And,
okay.
You know, they talk about those things. And you can only move so far and this and that. And a lot of games today are written with a more narrative bent, where you're more concerned about making a good story
okay.
than the physics. You're thinking,
right.
like,
we're
if
less
you saw
concerned
this in a
about
movie,
whether your shoes are going to wear out.
Right.
Well,
if you saw this in a movie,
yeah.
then what would be a cool thing to happen here? Or
okay.
can I move another 5 feet? Like, who cares? We're not measuring feet. Just like,
yeah.
if in,
yeah.
in a movie, you would be over there and you would do that thing. So
okay.
I like to take those new narrative indie games and make them do D&D instead, because it's kind of funny to me, and I like to hack games to make them do other things.
So you sort of munchkin blend like a new game, which is all narrative, with an old game, which is worried about how much rope you have.
Yeah.
And try to make those mechanics in the old games work in the new game?
Yeah, I like to see, like, in this other subgenre, let's see if we can make this thing work there. So, like, a good example
does
is...
it?
Always. a good example is a friend of mine, Josh Roby. He, for Margaret Weiss Productions, he wrote the role-playing game of Smallville, the TV show.
Okay.
So Smallville, in that game... It's because he watched the show. He was not a fan of the show, but he watched the whole show and he really dissected it. And you figure out what it's about. It's like literary criticism. You break this thing down. What's actually happening? And that show and that game are all about relationships and things you care about. No one cares what your dexterity is, what your strength is, right? It's not about that. It's about your relationships. So I thought it'd be great to take that and do old D&D with it. And let's do the Village of Hamlet with Smallville instead.
Okay, what's the Village of Hamlet?
Oh, well, it's an old AD&D.
It was the original module.
Yeah, lot of people played through. So, but
literally, I don't know what it
is. Right.
So, what's happening in the village? Why is the village being attacked by somebody?
In the village itself, there's this old abandoned moat house, and there's some an evil cult living there, and you got to deal with that.
Lex Luthor.
The premise.
Did you superimpose?
It wasn't about supers. It was just about, let's take D&D characters instead of making them about their charisma or their intelligence, let's make them about what they value. And let's make them about their relationships to other people.
Oh, you're doing it opposite of what I thought you were doing.
And let's see if it still works. Let's see how it still works when, like, you know, you attack that goblin and you're good at it because you value truth.
Okay, you know? Okay.
Like, let's take that same paradigm and shift it. I thought it was really, to me it was really funny and it worked. So.
Well, it's, I don't know, I mean, if it's funny, then you win.
That's all I care about.
But the crazy thing is that I thought you were taking Smallville and trying to force it into the square peg.
No, I don't
You're
care
doing
about,
the opposite.
Yeah, I just care about the mechanics. I rip the mechanics out of a thing and put them into another genre.
Okay, but the new mechanics, not the old mechanics.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, the old mechanics are whatever.
Yeah.
The narrative is more fun than worrying about
So see, how does this play if we emphasize different things and use a system that does that?
Oh, that's awesome. Because Smallville is, of course, the OC. I mean, it's Pretty Little Liars with superpowers.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It's less women make out. That's all.
Yeah.
And
That was just one thing. I do that with a lot of games. I just think it's kind of
What other indie games do you like that are out there? I mean, there's been a weird sort of explosion of this.
Yeah,
there have.
Yeah, well, because the internet has made it a lot easier, and the rise of PDF publishing.
Mm-hmm.
DriveThruRPG is a website where you buy things on PDF, and anyone can put a PDF together of a game if they want to, put the effort into it, and put it up there for sale. Or on a pay-what-you-want basis, or for free if you just want to get it out there.
Okay.
And there are print-on-demand publishers like Lulu and stuff that make it really easy for suddenly anyone can just make a game and put it out there, which is great. But there are 8 million games out there now.
Right.
There used to be 5 or something. Or 5 that you could have access to anyway.
Right. So it's got to be fun. But it's sort of like going...
How do you find this stuff?
Right. Exactly. Going to Ross Dress for Less. Last episode was about sales. Anyway, but you got to go through the racks. And to try to find a good one?
Yeah.
Right. Or you got to find somebody who's played a bunch of them and give us recommendations.
You look at reviews are a big deal. You know, you try
Is
to
there
find
a Board Game Geek kind of situation for this?
Yeah. There's RPGGeek.com and there's also RPG.net, which is a big role-playing game site.
So there's people reviewing
There's
other
lots
people.
Of sites, though, but yeah.
And then...
Yeah, role-playing game, RPGNet has a lot of reviews.
And then the people you're standing next to who happen to play RPGs are also wandering around the internet playing things you aren't.
Or you go like I had an interest in this game, OVA, and I was trying to find out more about it. And so I went to the company's website, looked on the forums, and was trying to figure out when could I get this thing in print, because it didn't exist in print yet. And
Do you like it better in print?
Yeah, a lot better, because it's so I don't have to have a device with me. Like, I'd rather just have a book than I can flip to that page. I don't have to keep swiping to find the right page.
Oh, okay.
But that one in particular, OVA, isn't available in print yet, so I ran it yesterday, actually, to do Star Wars, not the thing it was intended to do.
You are a big Munchkin Blender guy.
Yeah, no, that's a big thing. There's Fate to me is a game about... Like, I just always assume everyone wants to hack it to do other stuff, and that's not the case. But that's my assumption all the time.
So, Fate Is it the game mechanics? Is Fate the
it's a set of rules about how things work in the game. So when you say a game is powered by a certain system, it just means this is the rules are.
So they're set in here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is, you have given me a book. Thank you very much. It's called Fate Accelerated. And
it won last year at Gen Con, it won an award for Best Family Game of 2013.
Nice.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Well, that's neat. Yeah. And so this has the rules, and it can be applied to anything, but it is applied.
No, it is applied just to this. This is no genre in Fate Accelerated. You take it and make it be about whatever you want.
Oh, okay. So this is a separate bunch of rules that you can use on anything. Right. Oh,
which
good.
People do. People use it around Supers and Star Wars and anything and whatever, you know.
And that's what you did yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay, and you did.
Well, with a different game. But yeah, but I've certainly used Fate Accelerated before. It's great.
Okay.
It's what powers your Atomic Robo game.
Atomic Robo is powered by Fate Core, which is a slightly more intricate version of Fate. Fate Accelerated is kind of the stripped down intro version in a way of Fate Core, but people like it a lot on its own, just as its own thing.
Okay.
So Atomic Robo is a slightly more intricate version of Fate Core in a way. But it's also made for sort of a quick pick up and play. Character creation is very fast.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In the comic, Atomic Robo, which we should probably mention what that is.
Yeah, sure.
So the premise is in 1923, Nikola Tesla builds a robot assistant, basically, who's immortal and invulnerable. And he's just kind of intended to help Tesla with his work and then carry it on after he's gone.
I did read this.
Okay.
Hi, guys.
She remembers that.
So then after a while, Atomic Robo... starts a sort of a think tank company called Tesladyne.
Okay.
And gathers around him a group of action scientists who work for Tesladyne. They're all scientists, but they're also getting involved in action stuff.
Sure.
And they're sanctioned by the UN to go around the world and solve weird science problems and deal with things. So there's sort of supervillainy
elements.
I want
to be an action scientist.
Yeah, who doesn't? That's why the game exists.
Yeah, that's it. Everyone wants to be an action scientist.
So in the comic, you'll see faces. This struck me that you'll see people that you don't know who they are at first, and then over the course of a few issues, you get to know who they are, because there's a lot of action scientists.
Okay.
So that's how the game works. In the beginning, you might just have a few little things we know about you, and then you fill in the details as you play. So if you suddenly need to be better at flying a plane, you can be better at flying a plane.
Okay.
Because this is the moment in the story where we find out that you're better at flying a plane.
Right.
This is what I mean about caring about narrative and how a movie would work.
Okay.
Or a book, instead of the physics of it.
Okay. Right.
So instead of developing your entire character beforehand and being like, ooh, I wish I had taken this skill instead of that, you just do it in the moment.
That's in our D&D game, the artificer guy had to spend his entire time up in the attic building things. And so he didn't get to be in some of the action, like John's character, whatever. But it was just the narrative where you're just like, okay, we're playing a movie.
In a movie, would this guy just disappear for an hour of a movie and then come back? Probably not. So in Atomic Robo, for example, there are rules for inventing things because we're all scientists. So you're an engineer. So you're going to make things.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So the invention rules assume that you will successfully make the thing because you're great. Like, you're never not going to make it. There's no chance of failure.
Nice.
All you're worried about is what kind of complications do you have to go through to get the thing you wanted. So, for example, in one issue of Atomic Robo, Robo needs to build this weird hyperdimensional containment cage for this exotemporal being that keeps incurring onto our dimension and doing stuff that's bad. So he enlists the help of Carl Sagan. This is in the 70s.
Okay.
He gets Carl Sagan to help him.
Sure.
Carl Sagan, together they take some sensor array from Pioneer, from NASA, and they put this thing together. Well, those are all complications they had to go through to make the – of course they're going to make the thing, and they're going to make it in time because it would be a dumb story if it didn't happen that way.
Right. It's got
to – So those are complications. He had to use his connections. Robo had to convince Sagan to help him. They have to go out to certain locations, like –
Yeah.
So that's the conceit we're working with.
Okay. So that's the story, and then that transfers into games.
Yeah.
And now you get to work in games, but you also get to play a shitload of games.
I do. And, I try to.
That is your main focus when you go to a con. I mean, you're going for work.
How many games did you run versus how many games did you get to play?
I ran 3 games this weekend.
Okay.
One of them was an Atomic Robo game, playtesting something that Brian Clevenger, the author of Atomic Robo, and I are working on right now.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun. That was basically playing the bad guys from. As we usually know them, there's this bad guy organization, but playing them as the good guys, because I think they think they are the good guys. So It was a lot of fun. So we're both really excited about these bad guys as good guys, and he wants to do like comics about it. Now I'm like, yeah, great.
Yeah.
So I ran that. I ran D&D, and I ran this OVA Star Wars game about droids fighting for equal rights.
What D&D?
Well, did you mash it up into? Did you mash Fate into it or
no?
No, just regular D&D.
D&D. I ran D&D. I ran for organized play.
D&D. Oh, fair enough. Okay.
And I played all D&D all weekend. That's all I played. I've gotten super sucked into the organized play Adventurers League thing for D&D. The new edition of D&D.
Is that the fifth edition?
Yeah, fifth edition. Okay. So I was a big fan of fourth edition too. I really didn't think I was going to like 5th edition, and then right before it came out, I got intensely interested in it. And now, I mean, I occasionally, a couple times a month or something, I get to run a D&D game for a few friends in Temecula where I live.
Nice.
And that's been great. I've really been enjoying that. When I come to these conventions, I never get the chance to play a character and see them grow over time. Because I have two kids, and I don't have a weekly game situation going on. I pretty much only game at conventions.
Mm.
So then the opportunity to do that with a D&D character was irresistible, and it still is.
Yeah.
So I blew off a game I really wanted to play last night to play D&D instead.
There you go. Nice.
And I feel dirty. Like, and I didn't play any of the cool games with the cool kids downstairs. I didn't play any indie games. I didn't, my friends were running great games, and I was like, oh, that sounds great. Really want to play D&D.
I'm going to sit over here and find out if they have Cheetos.
Yeah.
And live some sort of caricature. But the thing is I think that that's the important... I mean, because gaming is your job, I think you do have to fill your life with the game that you want to play.
That's what I tell my wife.
It refills the well, man. It refills the well.
No, it's true. You do have to expose yourself to a lot of stuff. It's not enough to just, it's not enough to read games. You know, you got to play them, I think.
And
that's part of the thing that interests me when I take a game I've never played before and then hack it to do something else is that's my gimmick, my excuse to need to play this game because I'm doing something else with it. If I just showed up and said, we're going to play an anime game using OVA, there's not enough gimmick there for me. But if I say we're going to do it for Star Wars and it's going to be about droids fighting for equal rights, that is a gimmick.
What does OVA stand for?
OVA stands for Original Voice Actor, which is it's an acronym used to describing anime about whether it's dubbed or subbed.
Oh,
so OVA.
One of the next episodes is Sailor Moon. She's not in the Navy. Did you know that?
No, I did. Let me tell you, I don't want to get off on a tangent on Sailor Moon, but I saw Sailor Moon in the 90s when I was living in Canada, and I was just like, what is this? It was so baffling, and so I had to watch it every day.
Right.
And then I found out that that's just how schoolgirls dress in Japan.
In Japan? Well, yeah. Paige Branson got sucked into it, I think.
Listen, I get it.
Yeah. Oh, I think young boys get it a little bit more than Paige Branson does, but she was on board. But it was okay. So I believe she watched it both subtitled, and she watched it initially dubbed.
Yeah, I watched it dubbed.
And then it led to subtitled.
Right, right.
So
once you see those kind of things in subtitles, you hear the difference in the voice acting. It's so it's so remarkable. I can't understand what they're saying, but it's
right. But you can
tell. You get the.
There's a lot more
gist
emotion.
Of it, and it's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the subtitles are often more accurate than the dubbing would have been. So.
Right, and you get used to subtitles.
Yeah,
it takes approximately 4 minutes for you to forget that it's subtitled.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
The American companies that are putting these together don't hack them up as much as they used to in the 70s, too. So they're a little bit more Voltron.
What was Dragon Ball Z was very different when I ended up. I bought just bootleg at that place, Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
Toy Mandela Sherman Oaks used to have bootleg versions of Dragon Ball Z on VHS. And the kid when I first moved to Los Angeles, I was a childcare. I did nannying or whatever, and the kid that I babysat for Christmas, he was a giant Dragon Ball Z because he was 7, and I was like, I'm so sorry they're subtitled. You're going to have to learn to read. And, he's from Agoura Hills.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't read. No, he's a kid.
That's where I grew up.
And I know. He's, oh, yeah. No, he's a very – and he's a musician, actually.
Okay.
He's he plays the guitar, and he's a jazz musician in Seattle. And because he's a man now, because I'm 100.
Right.
Anyway, so but he, but yeah, so that was part of it. I've weeded off role playing games.
Sure.
So, but we've gone into anime, which is fine. And so, and you like to mix them up anyway. Do you play any board games, or do you?
Yeah, I like. Yeah, there are board games I like a lot. And like I was going to play Imperial Assault last night. That Star Wars version
game
of Descent that I blew off
to play.
I took a number of factors into account, decided to play D&D. But no, I absolutely. But my thing is, I often won't buy a board game that I'm really interested in because I figure if I'm going to play it, I'll be playing it with someone else who's also interested in it, and they'll probably own it.
And they will own
nice.
It.
Which is often the case.
And you have two children, so you're constantly thinking, $65 or...
Yeah, they get put on a high shelf.
Yeah, exactly. And now, how old are your kids?
2 and 5.
Okay, so they're super little so far, and they will one day...
In a few more years, they will be, they'll be ready
you can
to get
dip.
My 5-year-old son, Ben, has started to... He started to ask me questions about Dungeons and Dragons, or as he's called it, because he's confused it with words with friends, Dragons with Dungeons.
Oh, fair enough.
All right.
Dragons with Dungeons.
I showed him, he was looking at the DM screen for the new edition. I was showing it to him, look at this picture. It's this cool picture and all stuff. And I turned it over, and it's all charts and stuff on the back. And he goes, oh, I didn't know this was for a game.
Oh,
like, yeah. So he recognized that right away. So pretty good. And then he asked me like one question a day. He says, for Dragons with Dungeons, do you make your own character?
Oh, there
like,
you go.
Yeah, you do make your own character. He goes, okay. No more questions that day. The next day, for Dragons with Dungeons, do you get to name your character? Like, yeah, that's right. So like a little tiny thing a day.
And he's processing it into 24 hours. He's in the lab.
Yeah, I'm in no hurry. If he's interested, that's great. But I'm in no hurry to like shove that particular interest on him. Not like Star Wars. I'm in a hurry to shove Star Wars on him.
Well,
gaming
really?
He can get to. And I said, well, you know.
He's about ready for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
the animated show is kind of perfect for...
5?
I haven't showed him Rebels. But he has seen Star Wars. He's seen the movie Star Wars. And he's watched the Lego Star Wars shorts, which are great.
Which are great.
Right.
They're really funny. And the Phineas and Ferb Star Wars special, which was so clever. I don't know that show, really, but that special was really funny.
You know, I've heard really good things about Phineas and Ferb. You said that you, on your awesome list of dorkdoms, current kids television,
absolutely.
Because you have little kids.
Yeah. But I enjoy these shows on my own. Like I don't watch them on my own, but I have no problem
turning them on.
Well, the great thing is most everything on PBS is just fantastic.
They're still nailing it.
Yeah.
On PBS.
Yeah.
What
new,
the heck?
New shows.
What is it? What am I missing?
Sesame Street is still funny.
Okay.
And still has really clever, well, not still, but has cleverer parodies of things than
ever. We have seen some of those. Yeah. We saw the...
Home Lamb.
And
stuff that there's no reason to parody. On Arthur, they did a spot-on parody of Downton Abbey. No kid who watches Arthur is also watching
Downton Abbey. That's for you.
That's got to be
that's for mom and dad.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
On Odd Squad, which
Odd
is this Canadian show that I really love, it's about a group of... A secret organization of kids, not secret, but an organization of kids that solve, they go around the world and they fix things that are odd or strange, right?
Okay.
So it's great. It's ripe for a role-playing game. Like, that thing is a role-playing game now. But it's Canadian. There's an episode where they had on Mark McKinney, Scott Thompson, and Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall.
Wow.
So that was great. And then... In that episode, someone has a birthday, and they sing a birthday song to him from an episode of Kids in the Hall that I recognized.
Yeah.
And that's super for me. Like, that's not for kids at all.
At all.
So, like,
that's 25
best.
Years ago, and okay.
Yeah.
And so that's – so Odd Squad.
Odd Squad, I can't remember highly – I can't recommend highly enough. And also Peg Plus Cat.
Peg Plus Cat. I've never
Peg
even heard of that.
I know. Well, you wouldn't have.
Right.
Peg Plus Cat is it's a show about a girl and her cat, and it's all about teaching math, but it's really funny and sweet and clever.
Oh, that's great.
And I especially love it because it's about a girl doing math and basically – my dad's a math professor at Cal State Fullerton.
Okay.
And he runs summer programs for specifically to keep junior high girls interested in science, technology, engineering, mathematics.
Oh, that's
– So I'm aware – through him that like we got this problem where all kids start off interested in science and or math and then over time
they
lose their interest.
Yes.
Especially girls.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Peg Plus Cat is fantastic in that way and also just really smart and funny.
And funny as well. Yeah. So and Arthur's still holding up?
Yeah, you know, I never watched Arthur as a kid, but it's been on for 26 years.
Right. Wow. There's a new Arthur.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They had to get a new Arthur. There was drama.
It's pretty good. It's they they tackle only on Arthur. Do they tackle certain things? Like there's one about adoption. There's one about a girl who still wet the bed and she was going to a sleepover and she was really concerned about that.
Right.
Like they do weirdly serious things on Arthur. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they tackle them in a good way. And I'm impressed by that show. It's not of those. It's not my favorite show, but it's right. still great.
Right. It's very simple, but it is very it isn't dumb at all. I've seen more Arthur than anything else.
Yeah.
So
no, it's good.
It's and, been on longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Sesame Street, I've only seen those parodies. Sons of Poetry. And
you could go on naming them and we'd never run out because the list is so great.
What's a couple of good ones that I haven't seen? Because those are the only two I've seen.
They'll be on YouTube.
Yeah. They do a series of Cookie Monster parodies. It's I can't remember what the name of the umbrella for it is, but there's Lord of the Crumbs. There was like Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay.
He is like Frodo. Like he has hair kind of like Frodo. He has like the curly hair, but he's also Gollum because he's supposed to make these cookies and follow directions.
Okay.
And all of these Cookie Monster things are about impulse control for kids.
Okay.
That's like the main message. So he wants to just eat the chocolate chips. And the Gollum part of him is trying to talk him into just eating the chocolate chips.
Right,
and he's
and
like,
Smeagol
no.
And,
it's Slinker and Stinker.
Yeah.
So he has to like concentrate on just making the cookies like he's supposed to. And there's like a Galadriel figure and there's like a Gandalf figure. And,
that's
just hilariously. One really sticks out as being funny.
That's so great because they're needed. I mean, that was the purpose when we were kids. I mean, remember for years they were constantly talking about how all the kids, because a lot of the Disney shows are dumb for dumb's sake. And they aren't even, like High School Musical, I watched all three of those movies. There was a reason. I can't remember.
Where's your medal?
It's I saw the first one and I was fascinated because I was like, oh, it'll be like Grease. And I love Grease.
Yeah.
But Grease is filthy.
Yeah.
When I was 9 years old, I saw Grease and didn't get it half of it, but I loved it. And I sang those horrible songs about getting laid, like a crazy person, as did every 9-year-old girl in the world. Yeah. And then I saw High School Musical probably 5 years ago and I watched all three of them and there is no adult content.
Right.
And Disney could not have been more surprised that it was popular.
Right.
Because the first one was just made for television. And then the next two were made for the theater. Mm-hmm. But they don't even kiss until the third movie. So I was like, what is the draw of this? And even as a 9-year-old, I was like, well, at least somebody's getting some action. She's climbing out windows. There's trouble. But in high school, they're not even bad kids.
Yeah,
they're like even – they're not even doing anything wrong. They're just
– they just get to sing.
They sing and there's drama.
Yeah.
And they're sad occasionally. They've got feels.
Well, they to set up the song.
Right, right. So I have a hard time with the Disney shows, but I'm glad that – so PBS is your main
– I think there are things on Disney Junior that are fine. That's another channel I could leave on and not really worry about what's on. Like any time I turned it on, it would probably be something okay. But it's not that great. Like I usually
– like the writing isn't as good.
It's just kind of lesson-y, you know? Like
okay.
It's kind of – like a work together, you know, like right. really just like platitudinous messages that aren't that big
but
a deal.
They haven't really dug to make them clever.
Yeah, but I love that Odd Squad says, here's what patterns are. And here's how you can use patterns to help you do a thing, to help you predict a thing. Or their way, Peck Plus Cat says, hey, if you're adding one to a number, just count up to the next number. Like they're explicit about like math skills or cognitive skills that you need to have. And that's way more interesting to me than like, hey, we should be friends. You know,
right,
like
right,
that
right,
thing.
Right.
And that's why I like Arthur, because they're really specific situations about like, my family is adopting a baby girl from China.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for me?
Right. And they say it out loud.
Yeah, yeah. And that's explicitly what it's about.
Yeah.
It's not about like, hey, you should be nice to your friends. Like,
yeah,
there are those episodes too, and they're just kind of milk toasty. But I like the ones where they're speaking to a very specific thing to kids.
So there's PBS, but then like there's Cartoon Network and there's
Cartoon Network,
cartoons.
Which he never, I never put on Cartoon Network for Ben. Like,
okay.
There's nothing on it that he's particularly interested in.
No, I mean, look, I'll show him garbage too. He loves Transformers. I'll let him watch the 80s Transformers.
Right.
Wow.
Not the new stuff.
They're awful.
Because the new ones are really like dark and Transformers Prime seems really dark. Rescue Bots is fine. But also there's He just likes robots shooting and flying around. Like, that's fine.
So, do we all.
His favorite shirt is, I got him a couple of shirts from Comic-Con that I go every year, and his favorite shirt now that he wears, he wore twice last week because it got laundered, and then he was allowed to pick out his clothes, and he put the same shirt on. Is it just a old Transformers shirt, like a pictures of a bunch of old Transformers. That's
right.
And he just loves...
He loves the idea of robots.
Yeah, he loves robots, yeah.
Have you taken him to the Universal to see the Transformers?
No.
Have you seen any of the videos of that?
No.
Because they are the greatest characters that anyone has ever done.
That's the movie Transformers.
They are the movie Transformers, yeah. But it's specifically the characters in the suits that are in the park.
Oh, okay.
They have some giant suits that these guys are in, and it's a phenomenal street theater.
Right. It's street theater, and it doesn't really have anything to do with the movies. Right. And like, I never watched – I had a Transformer – I forget who the Transformer dork was, but he was great. And it was probably a year and a half ago.
Edit that in later.
And sure, look it up, people. Type in the words Dork Forest and Transformers, or any dorkdom, and you will find the dorkdom of your dreams. So I love the idea that you were like current kids TV, especially on PBS. But does he watch like nature shows and stuff too?
Yeah. Another thing,
and Antique Roadshow. And Genealogy Roadshow?
For a while, he was totally content to watch HGTV shows.
Okay.
Like home makeover shows.
Yeah.
And he got really into, every time he'd go to the bathroom, he'd rearrange everything in the bathroom. And he'd watch, come in, look, I changed the room. I put shelves in his room. It's like, oh, are we going to transform my bedroom? He's really excited. He wanted to like help me and look at stuff. And he's not as interested in that anymore. But
sure.
What he I've gotten him interested in, because I come from... you know, a family of people who are interested in, like, I don't know, some slightly fringy stuff. My family used to live in Roswell, New Mexico, for example. So
okay.
I've grown up with aliens stories.
Right.
So we were watching some TV show, but it was dramatic recreations of Close Encounters and stuff
okay.
like that. And
was it Ancient Aliens?
No, it was. No, okay. I'm not going to let him watch Ancient Aliens. Come on.
I've never seen
that. Got to draw a line somewhere.
Okay.
No, it was just like one of them was Best Evidence Ever Caught on Tape, which is all terrible. It's all just blurry spots in the sky. It's like, Daddy, that's an alien spaceship. I said, well, we don't know what it is. In all fairness, I don't think it's that.
It's a UFO.
But then the recreation shows I like is just someone telling their story, and then you get to see that played out. And so I'm not going to refute someone's story necessarily. I refute the dumb video that doesn't look like anything.
Right.
So he's watching that, and he got really interested in that. So in the next day, he's like, Daddy, remember that movie about alien spaceships? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that was pretty good, right? Like, yeah, he's like still thinking about
still,
it.
So. Yeah, working it out.
Yeah, that is a kid that's processing some information. Yeah, yeah. I like that his processor is slow and thorough.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever information you give him.
Yeah, kids have an incredible memory because they don't have to remember much.
Right.
So all of that space that you know we have taken up with, I don't know, you know, an eighth grade math test. And our failure there. And like, he doesn't have to know that. He remembers everything. He'll bring up a thing from a year and go, remember that thing?
It's a simpler time.
Yeah.
That's why we all think of it as a simpler time.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have any responsibilities. We just had to get up and follow direction and hopefully learn something. Are you taking them to cons yet or no?
We went to WonderCon last year.
Smaller, right?
Yeah. If you have a pro badge for Comic-Con, they just... throw a pro badge at WonderCon and guest badges at you. They're like, here, please go to WonderCon.
Oh, that's great.
So we were already going to...
Note to self.
Yeah.
Note to self.
We were going to Knott's Berry Farm the weekend of WonderCon.
Right.
And we're going to stay at a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, let's go the next day to WonderCon and check that out. So we did, and because my wife never goes anywhere. She's a geek supporter, but she's not any kind of geek herself.
Okay.
So we took the kids there. And
we got to have her on because she has a dorkdom.
Ben was really standoffish at first. Like, he didn't want to go up to the guys dressed as stormtroopers. He just kind of wanted to silently look at things by himself. And then we turned a corner, and it was the R2-D2 and WALL-E Builders Club. He loves WALL-E, and he loves R2-D2. So there's all these full-size R2-D2s, full-size WALL-Es, and then, like, now he wants to get down to go over there and check them out and poke at them and stuff. And so that was really great to see him do that. He was so excited about that.
Is that in the dealer room, or was that just out and about?
Yeah, no, that was in the dealer room.
Yeah.
The exhibit hall, or I guess I can't call it a dealer room if they're not selling WALL-Es, but...
Right.
Right.
Yeah, whatever it is. That room.
Okay, so is an exhibit room different than a dealer room?
No, I'm just being pedantic.
Oh, fair enough.
Which is another one of my dorkdoms.
Oh, there we go. Let's put that on the list.
Pedigree and grammar.
Excellent. A lot. Two words. And Yeah, that's because I've now been to probably six conventions.
Yeah,
and right. and I like them. They're great. They're a little crowded. A lot
it depends
of people.
On the convention.
Yeah, and you've been to some of the most crowded conventions too.
Yeah, so, Comic Con is the worst.
Comic Con, which was I think your first convention.
Yeah, it was, unfortunate.
3 or 4 years ago crazy crowded.
Yeah,
and then, it just gets worse every year.
And then Gen Con last year, was
Gen Con last year?
Yeah,
Jackie.
Right, because you were at Gen Con, right?
Yeah. I've been doing it for the past few years.
Well, I'm going to do stand-up, and I do a live Dork Forest at Gen Con this year. We're in the talks.
I was trying to get...
Please don't hold me to that.
I was trying to get Thrilling Adventure Hour, and I can come out and do panels and podcasts at Gen Con. So it's let's go promote this Parks and Magic game.
Thrilling, and I'm sure I just got a text from... I get it mixed up.
Yeah.
I think it was Acker. And because he was on the show talking about his favorite, and one of them came to Thrilling Adventure Hour the other night, and he's met everyone but Wes Anderson now.
Wow.
And he has three favorite. It was the guy who did Hot Fuzz or.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. He was at Thrilling Adventure Hour the other night. And
this is what I get for.
Oh, and but the
have you had a chance to see any of it live? Or
you've seen because you were a Thrilling Adventure Hour dork as well from your T-shirt you're wearing a Thrilling Adventure Hour.
I will make the drive, the hour and a half drive to there to see
from
the show,
from Temecula,
and then drive back that night to see.
Okay,
it.
All right, for sure.
It's
every time
I will be doing it in March and April for the last two shows.
Okay,
I've only seen
one, but it was wonderful.
Yeah, they all are.
It is an amazing production and effort and a beautiful...
I feel like a fool because every time after every show, I go up to Acker and or Blacker and say, really amazing show tonight. Maybe the best show? Like, it feels like I say that every time.
Right. It is.
But it's true.
It's very cool.
It's always such a good time. And if you enjoy the podcast, the live experience is so much more. Like, you would think, because I was like, I don't need to see it live. I listen to the podcast. I get it. But the live experience is just... It's a whole other thing.
Well, you're sitting in a room with 270 people who really wanted to see. I mean,
there's so much energy. There's so much going on stage visually that you can't see. Like the little looks they give each other or even the blocking or how someone enters or exits the stage. Just lots of stuff that goes on that you don't get out of the podcast.
Right.
But also the community aspect. These same people come to every show and you see the same people once a month. And you know, that's really great.
Which is sort of a con feel as well.
Yeah, definitely. It feels like a monthly convention for Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Thrill Con. Yeah, they should have. It's interesting to me that they even do the community part of it is, I think, the most fascinating thing about conventions, just because you end up getting these sort of lifelong. It's like camp.
Yeah.
It's sort of like it's anime camp or it's board game camp or whatever, and then you run into the same people.
Yeah, right. You see the same people three times a year or whatever, and they're never seen again.
I hadn't been to one in easily 10 years.
Oh, really?
Here in Los Angeles, a gaming convention. And going back there this time, I'm like, I know that guy. I've met that guy before. Mm-hmm. I've met that guy before. I've met that guy
so
before.
So everybody's still going.
All these people, I don't remember their names, and they don't remember me, and I don't remember anything about them other than they just look really familiar, and I'm sure I've played a game with them in the past.
Right. Now, Matt Weinhold's been on the program a couple of times, and he loves monsters. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go to something called Monster Palooza, which is three times a year as well, I think, or something like that, here in Los Angeles. Because you can get the actors. I mean, I guess, which is why there would be more cons here than other places, because you're like, well, Terry Garr probably is just sitting at her house. Why don't we invite her?
And I love the fact that she goes to Monster Palooza.
Instead of Tootsie Con?
Instead of Mr. Mom Con?
right.
Yeah. It is great.
Because Young Frankenstein is, I guess it's a monster movie.
Right?
There is a monster.
Yeah. There's a monster there, but it is a... Yeah, that is a great
Listen,
movie.
If you were in Young Frankenstein, you'd be riding that out the rest of your life.
right.
Why wouldn't you?
You got a mortgage payment. You might as well show up at Monster Palooza. It's perfectly good. All right, now... Before we not talk about it, because I need to talk about it, drum and bugle corps, last thing on your list. And I'm I love a drum and bugle corps.
Last thing on the list, first thing in your mind, in your heart. Well,
How did it begin?
I marched in a drum and bugle corps. I marched in the Sacramento Freelancers from 90 to 92.
Oh, they're famous. The Freelancers are actually quite well renowned.
They were, yeah. I mean, they're not around anymore, unfortunately. There's an alumni corps, but they folded in after 94.
Okay.
So, but they are unique in that maybe not unique anymore, but they were in that they folded in 86. They didn't field a corps in 86. Then they came back in 87, and then in 89 they popped back into finals, which was remarkable. Like, no one had done that before.
Yeah, that's...
So then after they made finals, I was like, yeah, freelancers, let's march freelancers. Yeah. I played flute at the time. I didn't even play a brass instrument.
Right.
So I wasn't even qualified to be a part of that, but I quickly became a big fan of drum corps because an older girl in high school in our marching band marched right. in the Velvet Knights. And she okay. played euphonium in Velvet Knights, and so she brought back tapes and videotapes, and I was just, like, I was kind of in a marching band, but it wasn't a huge deal for me, and I saw these, and I, like, my mind was blown. Like, I was so, like, I don't know, I could not process how great it was.
Well, let me go back to that last statement.
Yeah.
You were in marching band, but it wasn't that big a deal.
Yeah.
How is that even possible? I mean, because it takes up so much time and effort.
Yeah, but you play an instrument
but
in junior high.
But flute is different.
Well, you
still
play an instrument
gotta march.
In junior high. Yeah, so what? So you gotta march. You don't have to do it well. It's high school. you don't have to be super committed. You're there because you need to fill an elective. You play a musical instrument.
And so it was just an okay marching band, and you saw something that was incredible and really well done?
My freshman year of high school, we were pretty good.
Yeah.
Because the previous band director was really good and had built up a great program. So we had this huge big band. The show was already written.
Yep.
The new director came in and just had to direct that.
Got it.
And we did well. After that, we took a precipitous nosedive. I loved that band director,
yeah.
Tony Kassane, rest in peace. But he was a great guy
dead?
And a great drummer. He is.
Oh,
he's a great guy and a great drummer. But he right. should not have been directing a high school band. But
right.
if you're going to teach high school and you know music, like, it's really easy to end up just directing a marching band. You know,
sure.
Being the music teacher at a high school means you have to be a band director usually, right?
Right?
So he just ended up doing that. It wasn't really his gig. But
so you just saw the game get raised. Is
yeah,
that what
yeah.
it was?
So,
and that's what blew your mind?
Yeah, it was a sequence of things. I saw drum corps, became a big fan of drum corps. 87 was a great year anyway. I think we can all agree to that. Okay.
Oh, so, sure.
I mean, Garfield, Vanguard, those two alone.
Right.
Then I got into a group called the Burbank Lancers,
okay.
which is a youth band that did a similar thing to drum corps, but just along the West Coast. They're part of the Pacific Coast Youth Band Association.
Okay.
Doesn't exist anymore. So we, during the summer, we toured up and down the West Coast and competed, and that was great, and we won our thing. I think I remember I was winning.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. Then in the winter.
What did you
winter,
play?
Oh, I played flute and piccolo.
Okay,
listen to this,
because
though.
It's a drum corps. They have flute and piccolo.
No, this wasn't a drum corps. This was a band.
Okay, that was a band.
Yeah,
okay.
So I could still play flute there, but here, listen to this scandalous thing. So I played piccolo, and I had a solo, because that's pretty good, you know,
sure.
and everything. And then there was another band that had come down from Canada that was staying at my high school, and I kind of hung out around them because, like, there's a band staying at my high school. I just want to see what they're about.
Yep.
And so I got to know some of the people there, and then we went to shows together. Like, we had that band would go to the same shows we went to, so I got to know some of these people, some of these girls.
Yep.
And we hung out at Disneyland together when we did our Disneyland parades. And then when we went to Vancouver, we did a show there. And then afterwards, a friend and I and the band went out with a couple of these girls.
Right.
And we shouldn't have done that, apparently, because I came back and we were in super trouble. We both were soloists. I lost my solo. And
it was some sort of like Pete Rose kind of competition thing? Or?
Yeah, we're competing. I think they're an exhibition, but we're doing shows competing. It's not about that. It was just about you're not supposed to take off. You're a kid.
You're a teenager.
You're 16 years old. Don't just take off with some girls in a strange city and we don't know what happened to you. Right? It was super irresponsible.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I was raised in the 70s when you were allowed to do that.
No, it was irresponsible.
Nobody thought
you'd
be killed.
But girls.
Yeah. Yeah, but girls. girls and boys make girls and boys do things where you weed off and you're like, all of a sudden you're riding in a car.
Yeah, so that was scandalous.
Be careful out there, people.
And then I think by the it was a big deal. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
So I marched in the Burbank Lancers, and that was like kind of a step above what I've been doing. And then in the winter, I was in the Tournament of Roses Honor Band, so I marched in the Rose Parade for the next 3 years.
Very nice.
And that was another – that felt like a – or maybe they went the opposite direction. Anyway, that felt like a step up. I felt like I was stepping my way up to drum corps. And then I got on a bus at Cal State Northridge and one day and rode up to Sacramento and – started rehearsing with freelancers and learning how to play a brass instrument. Like, I did not know how to play it.
Right. What did you play?
I played French horn bugle at first, which is I learned later when I was a vet.
French horn? Is that like a flugelhorn?
No, it's like the tubing of a French horn
right.
with a bell front arrangement.
Okay.
And that's it. So you hold it up just like a trumpet or a baritone or anything. It's just a lot of
tubing. With the three valve?
Yeah, three valves.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't have the thumb valve. It wasn't a double horn.
Okay, because you should know I'm a bit of a marching band geek myself. Great. And that's why I went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, is because I wanted to be in the band.
It's a good
and,
band.
Rangers of the Dork Forest will have heard this story 13 times, so I will spare you the sad, unfortunate I didn't get to be in the band. Anyway, so my brother got me a job instead. Anyway, so that's a short version. But I love Drum and Bugle Corps. Yeah. Just because of the
well, you must have known the scouts then. If you went to Madison,
yes,
yeah.
And I remember yeah. I went. It was the one summer I lived in Madison in between school, college. The there was a festival, a competition.
Well, finals would happen at that stadium
at Camp Randall.
Yeah, Camp Randall is such. I can't even.
It's gone now.
Just to remember it. It was such a great stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like so much history there, drum corps history there.
Yeah.
That we got to have finals there in 2002.
Okay.
Or, 2002. And it was so great to, because I was teaching another drum corps at the time. We were the smallest drum corps in DCI.
Okay.
We had to walk in there with those kids was
DCI.
Just so
drum
awesome.
Drum Corps International. Yeah. That's what it stands for. Well, yeah. I remember that. Very good for me.
So to get to be there with those kids was like so rewarding.
It's like historical. It
really
felt
was.
Like
we
a
were,
piece of.
And then they did their one show there because we weren't going to advance beyond where we were. But we, you know, it was just such an uphill thing. And then we walked out of that stadium and me and another instructor just like jumped up and down and shouted like, we did it. We did it. We actually finished the season teaching the score.
Yeah.
We were so excited.
And you got to perform. What I do, I have the last time I was in Madison was last summer or last whatever. And the guy who directs the University of Wisconsin Marching Band, Mike LaCrone, still directs it. And he directed it when I went to college there and had for years. So he must be a million years old.
Can I ask what summer it was that there was a drum corps thing happening?
It would have been 86 or 87.
87 was Kansas City.
Okay, so it might have been 84 or 85.
Those are all really good years.
Those are all amazing years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because what the first summer I went there in 84, so it would have been the 84 would have been fall the summer of 85.
Okay, yeah.
Because
some good.
I had just discovered stand-up comedy, and so I was like, I'm not leaving Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah. It's a good place to be. There
yeah, it was great. And then, well, no, but
well, I mean, there's places. Oh, maybe not then, but I know there are places.
Where there was one place.
Yeah,
there was.
Yeah.
It was underneath a crack den, a coke den, and I.
In all fairness,
owned by Sam Kinison. Right, not a crack den. It was coke. It was a coke front owned by Sam Kinison's brother, Bill Kinison, and I remember just wandering. I was over by because there was a diner I would go to, and I wandered. I was like, the hell is that marching band music?
Yeah.
And I snuck into Camp Randall and I spent like 2 hours watching a drum and bugle corps. It was so fun.
Oh man.
So
such
fun. I wanted
great
to do rifles
place to
in high school,
right.
But our marching band teacher in high school was so great. She irritated the rest of the county because she didn't have a life. She was
perfect. That's what you need when you're a band director. No life.
Her girlfriend was our theater. They were partners.
Yeah.
Nobody ever mentioned it.
Yeah,
there
was
always some because it was the 80s.
Right.
But the early 80s. Mm-hmm. But she was so. We marched in the summer. It was volunteer. And like I was going to quit. I played clarinet.
Yeah.
And I was going to quit in junior high. And my sister was like, just hold on until high school. You'll meet Miss Owie. And I was like, Mr. Owie's sister? And Mr. Owie did grade school.
Technically.
And yes. And she was like, she's nothing like Mr. Owie. Don't worry about it. And so.
He sounds like a guy who stubs his toe a lot.
Mr. Owie?
Yeah.
Owie. Yeah. And but Miss Owie was so great because in the summer we would march every day for 2 hours. And my parents were psyched.
Yeah.
They were like, get you take and once I moved to the marching band, I played bass clarinet. I was not a good clarinet player. I was horrible. I must have been like second to last.
Good on you for taking on bass clarinet, though.
Well, that's
thanks. We need you.
Exactly. That's what they said. You aren't good at this.
Yeah.
You could be first chair bass clarinet, and you could learn to count to a million because it was just 1, 2, 3, 4,
yeah,
2, 2, 3, 4, 32,
sure.
3, 4, bump, bump,
yeah.
And then start over. So that was concert band, and then I took trumpet. And it was a trumpet and marching band.
Oh, great.
And everything I learned, my sister learned and was better at than me because she was a musical.
Is she around? Can we talk to her?
I know. Talk to her about her. So you played flute in school
yeah,
and then piccolo, and then you
right.
got a degree Or you went for 2 years for composition.
Yeah, I went to UC Irvine for 2 years for flute performance because I didn't really know what... Speaking of being dorks,
yeah.
I really wanted to go to UCI. I liked the campus and everything. It seemed like a good school.
Well, that's
not really a great music program at the time. I was kind of very small music program at the time. But there's a set of dorms there called Middle Earth.
Oh, and that and literally
like,
you
were
like,
oh, that'd be pretty cool to live in Middle Earth, right? And there was like two phases. Awesome. And the second phase was brand new. Like no one had lived in these dorms before except for a tennis camp. And so we got to live in these brand new dorms, and there was the food hall was Pippin, and it was huge and brand new, and it was all great. Everything was named after stuff from Middle Earth.
Why was it named after Lord of the Rings?
Everything was named after Lord of the Rings. I don't know. I can't remember. But I loved it.
That's awesome.
You could eat a Pippin or you could eat a Brandywine. You know, there's like all the old ones were like Hobbiton and the Shire. And,
right.
And then the new ones were Rohan and Shadowfax.
I didn't know this.
Yeah.
I had... I lived
in Whispering Wood, which is not a name that appears in right? Lord of the Rings, which is disappointing.
Right.
But whatever.
Oh, well. That's fine.
But yeah, that was I'll admit it now, long after the fact. That was a definitely a factor in deciding to go to UCI, which I really liked.
Right.
So I went there for flute for 2 years, and then I was more interested in composition. So I thought I'd go somewhere else that had a composition program. And so my mom had gone to UCLA, so I was like, I'll go to UCLA.
Okay.
And I was really not qualified to be a composition major there. When I got there, I was in way over my head. I just did not have the theory background. I didn't play piano. I just felt behind everybody else all the time. I didn't have a good time there.
And so you bailed.
Yeah, I did.
Well, that's – are you kidding me? I think I was in my fourth year of college when they said, what are you majoring in? And I said, what does it look like?
What do you got?
Yeah. And they said, we have one more credit in poli-sci than you do in ancient history. And I said, I'm a poli-sci major, great. It turns out. And yeah, so
In my defense, I did come back to school later. I went to UCI. I went back in 2005 for English, and I got my degree.
Did you get – were you living off campus by that time?
Yeah, I was growing up and everything.
You were growing up, man. Yeah. And so you didn't get to ever stay at like in a Hobbit related.
But I was a writing tutor and I tutored in Middle Earth.
Oh, there you go.
So I got to hang out in my old activity room where I used to live there. So
that'll do. That'll do in a pinch. Quite honestly,
that was pretty good.
That's fun.
Anyway, go ahead.
That's great.
How did you like going back to school as an adult?
It was weird.
Yeah,
it was weird at first. I had to get used to the idea that there were going to be younger people there, younger than me, that were going to be more knowledgeable about things than I was.
About how old were you when you went back?
I was 33.
Okay.
Yeah, around
But
there.
You did it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How long did it take?
I did 2 years there. I did about a year of community college stuff to actually get qualified to be an English major there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back for English. But I was teaching when I was living in San Diego. I was teaching at Santana High School. I was teaching their marching band.
Right.
I wasn't the director. I was just like a helper guy.
Okay.
When I went to UCI, I thought I want to be the thing I'm really interested in is editing. Like I'd like to be an editor because I like to correct people and I want to get paid for it.
Oh, there you go.
So I got a job at the school paper as a copy editor, a lowly copy editor.
Okay.
With like
back in the
two 19-year-olds,
yes.
You know. So and I'm 33. And the editor-in-chief was also, you know, like 20 or something.
Right.
And it turns out he was a student at Santana High School when I was teaching there.
Oh, really?
And now he was my boss at the newspaper. And fortunately, he's a great guy. We're still friends.
Yeah.
But it built
all kinds of character.
It was really something to get used to, that everyone there was way younger than me, but I was in maybe the lowest position there, just like a copy editor.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone was super cool. We had a weird anomalous year at the paper that year. Everyone was great friends. We went out all the time and did stuff. And when I told them I was 33 or 34, however old it was at the time, they were like, what? We thought you were like our age.
Yeah.
You don't look 34.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I do look 34. I don't know what you think 34 looks like. But
right.
This is it. Don't insult me by saying I don't look 34.
Right. Because I've earned it. I've earned everything.
Well, it just makes it sound like, oh, you should be old and decrepit if you're 34. Like, no, you shouldn't. You should look like this.
Right.
It's
right.
not that bad.
It's not that bad.
But that was a good time there. And I tried to do everything I could at college. I crammed a time. I did a summer abroad in England.
Nice.
I had a couple radio shows on the college radio station.
Because you're eligible to do all that
stuff. I know. I can do it.
And you know how to do it when
so
you go back.
I had a drum corps show on the radio called I Hate Drum Corps from 3 to 6 in the morning on Wednesdays. That was the best.
Because what did you do?
It was so much fun. No one was there. It was just me. I played drum corps. You just drunk core music for 3 hours a week. It was so great.
Yes, that is awesome.
Yeah,
that was the best. So great. What are your favorite drum core pieces? Are there
my
great
favorite shows?
Yeah. Are there great pieces that you can name?
Just shows. But like we talked about 87 Garfield already. I'm a huge fan of Garfield in the 80s. Just really love all Garfield Cadet shows.
Okay. Now, when you say a show, are they not musical pieces?
Well, they're pieces, but you know, a show is 10 minutes or so of lots of different pieces put together.
Okay.
So we tend to, when we talk about drum corps, we talk about like shows, like units, because taking one piece out of there, one tune, isn't really the same.
Too much of a smash cut.
Well, and you're kind of putting a show together to do a particular thing. It's like,
and you did audio. Because one of my favorite things about drum corps is the visual.
Sure, but I like the, you know, but
the music is amazing.
Too. So I built myself up a big library of drum corps shows. Thank you, Napster.
Yep.
Before anyone realized what was going on.
Yep.
And then I played that for 3 hours a week, and I went by a pseudonym because the show was called I Hate Drum Corps.
Right.
And I didn't know if I should be playing these things on the air.
Yep.
So I had my radio name.
Excellent.
And then I...
what was your nom de radio?
It was Bob. Which was my nickname in drum corps. So it's not like it was a great name or anything. I
imagined something more complex, I have to say. No,
but I realized early on, it's going to be hard to fill 3 hours and still have a sense of what's going on. So I was like, I got to split this up into segments. So I had like an old-timey drum corps segment where I play shows from the 70s.
Okay.
I had a bit, just an ongoing bit that was funny to me called This Morning's Farmer that I stole from Alan Partridge.
Okay.
Where I was supposed to, because I was on at 3 a.m, so I was supposed to be interviewing a farmer every week. We're going to talk about farming. We're going to kind of break up the drum corps thing.
Okay.
And then every week there's an excuse why the interview didn't happen. Sometimes it was like, you couldn't hear him, you could only hear me, or he didn't call in when he was supposed to, or we pre-recorded one and then the recording didn't work, or something. They came up with an excuse every week to like, you know, so this thing could happen to amuse me.
Yes, yes.
So one morning, I got a call, which never happens at 5 a.m, whatever, at the radio station. Someone had a request.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was like, okay, we're taking requests, apparently. Here's the phone number. And then two other people called in with requests.
You had listeners.
And I got an email. I got an email request, too, and I ended up talking with this guy for a while on email during the show. Yeah, that was insane, knowing that people were listening and wanted to hear.
Right. That it wasn't just like your blog, where you were like, all of a sudden, I'm not just typing into the wind.
Right,
someone is reading this.
But, I mean, we had a broadcast radius around Irvine, but it was also on the internet. So, really, anyone could have been listening.
Sure. You
know, and people were, shockingly. Like,
because people do love drum corps.
Yeah, well, I did try to advertise on Drum Corps Planet. Like, I hate drum corps. This, you know, I was trying to get it out there.
And it worked.
Yeah, that was great. So, that was one show I had. And then I also had another show called Fake British Accent Theater. After I came back from England, I was like, I want to do British radio serials as a show. So I played like The Goons, and I played Hitchhiker's Guide, and I played the Lord of the Rings, the BBC Lord of the Rings series. And I had that for 2 quarters. And I spoke in a bad fake British accent. That's what I was calling it.
Excellent.
I was Nigel St. St. John.
Excellent.
That was a lot of fun to do. And I hardly talked at all because they're all like half hour or hour shows. It just got blocked.
And it was a 3 hour block again?
No, it was 2 hours.
A 2 hour.
But they were cool. The first quarter I was on, they put me on in like lunchtime. Cause they're like, people could listen to a story during their lunchtime.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, good idea. Cool. Mm-hmm. Thanks, director.
Yes.
Whoever's doing the programming. So, and then I was on at 6 a.m, the second quarter, which wasn't as good. But
right. But people may be driving in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but anyway, we got up
Mike
on
Olson.
Thing. Yeah.
This has been a delight.
Yeah, sorry. I feel like it got real tangenty, but I guess that's what you do.
Yeah, that is exactly that's the program.
That's exactly what it turns out. About.
It's so it's at Devlin1,
that's right.
Devlin, mm-hmm. with the number 1.
Yeah.
And then spiritoftheblank.blogspot.com is your own gaming blog, essentially, right?
Yeah, it's where I write about whatever I'm doing now with Atomic Robo or what's, because that's been most of it lately.
Right.
Or what's, if I have a new mechanic or a hack I've thought of, I'll put it up on there for like,
fun.
I've gone through different things like here's swashbuckling stuff and here's, here's some zombie stuff and here's, you know, whatever.
Neat. So, and regular Atomic Robo is just atomic-robo.com.
Well, atomic-robo.com.
Dash? Oh, well, not hashtag. That, yeah. Hashtag is a pound symbol.
That's another thing. But yeah, so
I'll be over here.
We should mention that Brian Clevenger and Scott Wagner, the creators of Atomic Robo, they have
decided. Which is a comic, yeah.
Yeah. They've decided they had been with Red 5 Comics for a long time, for 9 volumes, and now they've decided to go to a webcomic format. They're also going to publish those as volumes when the series is done.
Okay, so there will be hard copy eventually.
They will come out in print.
But they're going to go webcomic with the new ones.
Yeah, the webcomic first for free.
for free.
And they're currently releasing an issue a week of Atomic Robo, going back to the beginning and releasing all of Atomic Robo for
those
free
on the website.
Those first
nine volumes.
That's right. So fantastic.
Yeah. And there's going to be additional stuff, too. They're running a Patreon. If you go to atomic-robo.com, a Patreon's a crowdfunding thing where they get people say, I'll donate this much a month. And they say, if we get X dollars a month, we'll produce this. If we get X plus five, we'll produce this.
Fair enough.
So so they're doing that now, and it's going really swimmingly for them. So excellent. That's great. So if you were at all interested in Atomic Robo, I would say go to that website and check it out, because you can just read it for free.
Read it for really free, great. Catch up, and then throw them some bucks if you like it.
Yeah.
And that is always swell.
Even if you don't like it, a few bucks, you're not going to miss it, right?
Yeah, yeah. What do you care?
Yeah.
Come on. this is, by the way, never introduced you, Andy. Andy Ashcraft, always...
Hello, people. Yes, I've sat in on this one.
Sat in on this one because it's about gaming.
Cut that in the beginning. And then...
It's a... No, there will be no editing. In other news, Andy Ashcraft, as you know, GiantsDanceGames.com.
And one day I will update that website.
And everyone will know more. And whatever, just email Andy. Or email me, Jackie@JackieCation, and I'll forward it to him. Because it's been great. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being on.
Thanks.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?